Hello, I'm Sam Raimi, the director of Evil Dead, and I'm with Rob Tappert, our producer. Robbie?
I'm feeling a little old right now, but I remember when we shot this for the fourth time, Sam. This is a whole different opening than we originally had. We shot this opening four or five times, different openings, and this was the last thing we shot on the before the movie came out.
What did we have before this?
All different things racing through the woods, and then
just didn't look dramatic enough?
Yeah.
Or too fast, maybe. And then we wanted to build it. Look at Bruce here. Looks like he's been drinking. My direction was like, you've been in the car for 2 hours, you're having a good time, but you're a little bored. Looks like he's drunk or something there. That's the 1973 Delta 88 Oldsmobile Classic.
Made many appearances in many different films. Did it make it into A Simple Plan, Sam?
It did. It's in that picture, too. It's had love scenes played in it. It's run over dummies. It's hung off the Belle Isle Bridge. It's battled on the Lodge Freeway in Detroit. It's really been in a lot of pictures. Great movie car. Made in Detroit.
This was a classic. We had asked for a logging truck to have all the logs on the back under chains, and the chains snap and the logs came off. Well, of course, we showed up on the day, and they couldn't do anything. There's the director and the producer on the side of the road, Paco and Sparky, waving at... Sam and I had just cut each other's hair.
What's this place like anyway?
We did.
Yeah, and it really looks stupid.
One horrible night. That's why it's a long shot, probably.
The best part is we get it so cheap.
Yeah, why are we getting it so cheap?
Well, I don't know. Might be in real bad shape.
Classic dumb expressions on Bruce's face.
I remember we couldn't get into the cabin for the first 2 weeks. That first location fell through, so we were stuck shooting this car stuff for like...
2 weeks.
Was it that long, right?
That and the night stuff, yeah.
I think this is where we get off.
See in the background of that shot, Rob? To the right of the Delta, if you rewind your disc, you'll see Rob Tappert standing back there.
That's right.
That's what it called. It's murder beams. Just styrofoam decorative interior beams. But we would, since they're made of styrofoam, we'd be wailing them over each other's heads in the Super 8 movies we made. They look like wood logs.
And this was the drive down to the cabin that over the course of 3 months of shooting became sheer mud till no car could go down there.
This really was the drive to the cabin. A lot of movies fake a road like this to the location. We weren't smart enough to do that. We just got lucky that we had this long, lonely... overgrown past this cabin, because we probably wouldn't have been smart enough to really shoot that if it didn't really lead to the cabin. You know, we wouldn't have been smart enough to fake it, probably.
And all the cast people that are in the car all came from Detroit. We held these casting sessions in Detroit, and nobody really trusted us. They thought we were making either snuff films or porno, so they'd show up with their boyfriend to kind of look over them at the casting and make sure that we were somewhat legitimate, but we weren't.
That was one of my favorite parts of the picture back there, when the car comes in real quietly and they slowly fade up that booming sound. Joe Masefield did a lot of our sound design. The great Edna Ruth Paul cut the film, and Joe Masefield designed the sound.
And Joel Cohn edited a lot of the action scenes.
Yeah, he was the first assistant editor. And Edna let him cut some scenes, a few scenes, and he did a great job. That's how we became friends. I remember it was still nice and warm and we would shoot this stuff. Then the days wore on and winter came. The crew slowly left. We ran out of money. They dwindled down to just
Bruce, Goodman, Josh, and you and me.
I think that smoke in the air was your cigarette smoke at the time. We couldn't afford Fuller's Earth or Fog.
Or Fog.
Well, do your thing. Remember buying that clock with me?
Yeah.
We went to that old clockmaker, and we said, hey, can you run it to rig in reverse?
Well, sure.
Can you run it to stop on cue? Well, sure. Like he had made six of these horror movies before. He knew how to do everything. How would he know how to run it in reverse? It doesn't make any sense. Remember, all we had to do was flick a switch or something? It was insane.
Right. It all ran. This was actually our setup for our tribute to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Once Upon a Time, with all the dangling bones. Having been...
To let Toby Hooper know that we did know that he was the master of the 16mm horror picture. Homage.
But he had moved on. He was busy doing Poltergeist.
Of course, in a slaughterhouse picture, you understand why they're hanging bones. In our picture, I'm not sure I get it yet. Still working on that, the answer to that.
This is Ellen Sandweiss. And Ellen had been in a bunch of Super 8 movies that Sam and Bruce and a couple that Sam, Bruce, and I did together. She was the victim in the Super 8 movie that we used called Within the Woods to raise money. And Bruce was the monster in that one. But she was an old high school chum of Sam and Bruce's.
She had been in a lot of the high school productions. She was a great singer, and still is a great singer, and a great actress. And she was really the queen of Super 8 movies. Her and a woman by the name of Jane Boltrude, the two of them. But Ellen went on with us into the feature world. Tom Sullivan did all these sketches for us that very lightly traced so that you could see them like tracing paper. But he did the clock and that one of the book. Holy... I just keep thinking we should have been so much more subtle on that. Why was that the damn thing moving so much? A little goes a long way.
That was a scare that never quite worked right.
That wearing blenders come back in style since then. That's how old you are.
Yeah.
As a Greek friend of mine once said, he said...
I don't even think we had enough props to make a whole dinner there.
This.
We had like a we sent somebody out for a bag of rolls and ketchup.
Two tarin.
And I think maybe some Kool-Aid. I don't know.
I always see that hand tossing it up.
Whose hand was it? Don Campbell?
Probably. Bruce's brother, who was down there working.
There was no cellar in this cabin. We cut a hole in the floorboards. I think Dart Frankel. And put hinges on the thing, nailed it together like a trap door, and then dug a hole with Don Campbell about 6 feet down and laid about half of a stairway down in there to give it the appearance as though there was a cellar. And then I think we shot the actual cellar in your basement, right, Rob?
My folks had a farm in Marshall, Michigan that we shot the rest of it in.
Yes, sir. I want you to go down and check. Sure.
Scotty, I'm not going down there.
Okay, you coward. I'll go.
So from this shot...
Back in a minute.
...to...
Michigan State. That's where Rob and I went to college in. But we were when Evil Dead was written, where Rob got the idea that we could actually make a feature film. Rob and I and my brother Ivan had been making Super 8 movies, a few of them, for about 2 years and marketing them on a small scale. We'd take out an advertisement in the state news at Michigan State University, and we'd rent a theater, we'd project it and tear tickets and show these movies we would make. And the first one, called The Happy Valley Kid, we made a lot of money on it, didn't we?
We did.
Cost $750. And I think that we made back a total of like $1,500. Am I wrong about that?
We made like $10,000 at the end.
Oh, we did?
But, yeah, with advertising that, yeah.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Well, that's the only one we brought up.
I mean, paying back the janitorial costs, the advertising, typesetting. Yeah, we made... How much do you think we made off of Happy Valley Kid?
A tremendous amount for Super 8 filmmakers.
Is that what spurred you on thinking we could make a feature film or not really?
Yeah, it seems simple enough.
We had to pull the staircase out for that up angle of the harpies.
And this is 6 months later.
The down angle in your cellar in Marshall, Michigan?
Yeah, this is all 6 months.
Wallabies, that's the lamest shoe. That's the one thing, thank God, they did not bring back from the 70s.
But you thought they were the shoe that would never change.
That was the idea about all of the wardrobe. I wanted to make a movie, and so did Rob, where we dressed the people in a way that it wouldn't seem like a 70s or a 1980 movie when we shot it. So we just tried to keep them out of stylistic clothes and keep Bruce Campbell in...
A blue work shirt and brown corduroys. And
assuming they would never go out. And hey, wallabies can never go out. Unfortunately, what we overlooked is that Bruce is so whipped, so terminally whipped from the inside out, that he is stuck in 1979.
Scotty?
And that he is perpetually dated. I guess it's just... Or maybe he's the man of the future, perhaps, now that time's coming back. That was shot in...
Your garage.
I think so. Slowed down optically, that shot, double printed. Didn't have enough of it. But they still look dated, don't they, all the outfits?
No. Somehow? They look like college, young college students.
Pudge probably called Bruce. That's an extensive cellar in Marshall you had there.
Mm.
Now we're in my garage.
Right. This movie was shot over many different little shoots, running out of money, having to go back, not getting the right pieces we need. Sam, you want to explain the Hills Have Eyes posters?
I'm afraid that Bruce probably did already on the other track.
Ah, go ahead. They can edit it out.
Don't shoot.
We saw... No, they won't touch it. They'll just let it play, leaving us out there hanging out to dry. But when we saw The Hills Have Eyes, Wes Craven's great masterpiece of horror, we noticed within it that he had a Jaws poster that was ripped in half, as though when the creatures had come into this trailer, that was one of the things that got torn asunder. And we thought it meant to say, folks, Jaws was just pop horror. This is real terror. So we put the Hills Have Eyes poster up on the wall and tore it in half. Why it would be in the cellar again of this farmhouse starts to make me ask some tough questions of myself. But we wanted to say, no, Wes, your picture says pop horror. This is what it's about.
That dagger was made by Tom Sullivan, the makeup artist and production designer and general guy who got all the bad jobs. But Tom had a little room of bones that smelled of decaying flesh and chickens where he slept every night, because he kept all of his little props and things that he was making next to his bedside.
It
was
a real turd.
Like you, kind of.
Hey, I just like me. I'm going to break your face. And to also, into this
a tape recorder makes an appearance in Evil Dead 2 also. It was Dad's old, Bruce's dad's old tape recorder. In fact, Bruce and I used to do skits on that tape recorder when we were in high school.
It has been a number of years since I began excavating the ruins of Yondar. Now my wife and I...
Is that the voice of John Dorian?
Here I continued my research undisturbed.
Perhaps.
Myriad distractions of modern civilization and far from the groves of Academe. I believe I have made a significant find in the Kandarian ruins, a volume of ancient Sumerian burial practices and funerary incantations. It is entitled Naturan de Manto, roughly translated, Book of the Dead. The book is bound in human flesh and inked in human blood. It deals with demons, demon resurrection, and those forces which roam the forest and dark bowers of man's domain. The first few pages warn that these enduring creatures may lie dormant, but are never truly dead. They may be recalled to active life through the incantations presented in this book. It is through recitation of these passages that the demons are given license to possess the living.
Hey, what'd you do that for? It's just getting good.
I just don't want to hear it anymore, that's all.
Kind of like what happens in Dead of the Living Dead, isn't it? That's it, that bit.
A bit like that, yeah.
Dead of the Living Dead was a big influence on this picture. Rob and I were big fans of what Romero had done with a small budget, 16mm, and just one cabin location. And that all came from Romero when we wrote this picture.
World's cheapest effect.
Fog and red light. Yeah.
That was in the days we didn't even bother to get tempered glass. We just kind of kept everyone cleared out and went and broke the window.
Yeah, watch your eyes. There's glass coming through. Irresponsible. Yeah. Hal Delrich got his name, I'm told, from him and his two roommates, right?
Right.
His real name is Rich DeManicor. But wary of the quality of the picture he was in, I think he wisely decided to change it. But his roommates were Hal and Del.
Right.
That's how he came up with it.
This is where, when you're sitting in the theater, the audience is starting to get really antsy, waiting for something.
Saying, I paid my good money, what the hell's going on?
Yeah. Deliver the blood, because it really was is set up more like the old, slightly old pictures. It builds, and then it just gets violent and gory.
This is an item that Bruce found at the
Corey Jewelers,
some mall. Yeah. Hey, who was the investor that saw our picture at the premiere We had been trying to make a horror picture, and he turned to us and said, "I'm very upset. I thought you boys said you were making a horror picture, not a comedy." Remember that? You better not give his name.
I don't want to give his name.
I was thinking to myself, but I did try to make a horror picture. He didn't realize that a terrible insult that was. He was mad.
He was.
I was really doing my best. Maybe he heard the audience like howling at the absurd things in the picture.
Yes.
And then thought maybe he wouldn't get his money back or something? I mean, was he upset on creative grounds?
I don't think he understood it.
Probably a man of intelligence, then.
The world's most rinky-dink prop.
We were originally going to do a bit, maybe where the sun came through that glass and, I don't know.
Burned a hole or...
In the book, and that's what gave him the clue. I didn't know. We bought it and we realized that we can play with this, but it turned out to be just such a clunky prop and we never ended up doing anything with it.
No, just repeat the idea in Evil Dead 2.
Well, we were stuck with a prop, I think, is what happened. Bruce is looking at his mark there.
From this point out, the movie works for me. Up until now, I just feel, okay. Except the girl walks in the woods, and this is just the... the classical dumb horror move.
I remember none of the girls wanted to kiss Bruce because he had a, and I'm embarrassed to mention this myself, but he had a gastric problem. And they just don't want to get close to him.
This was very risque for us at the time, to do a topless shot.
Absolutely. But Rich didn't mind.
The opening night of Evil Dead, we went with Bob Shea, the head of New Line, who released the picture first to the 49th and Broadway Theater.
The Rivoli.
The Rivoli, that was the one.
Rivoli twin.
And
it wasn't a twin at the time either, it was just the Rivoli.
Right. And the audience was going crazy at her walking out in the woods and going, you stupid, this. And Bob was squirming quite a bit because he didn't know quite how to take all the audience criticism and talking back to the screen. They hadn't done Nightmare yet or had any of their successful horror films.
Right.
He actually won.
In fact, he left that showing saying, "I think we're going to have to cut this picture up to correct some of these problems." And then he saw...
Then we walked over to the Rialto on 42nd Street. And it was like 8 o'clock at night, and the show was sold out till midnight already. And
people coming out were raving about the picture. And so he said, well, maybe we can find a way to leave it alone. It was the shortest change of an editing plan I'd ever... You know, he was so... such a lack of commitment once he'd seen that the second show was working well. Thank God that he had saw that second show packed and a crowd that seemed to like it. It's a lucky turn of events.
I know someone's out there.
If you can call having this movie a lucky turn of events in its current state, that is.
I heard you.
I dubbed you in the booth.
This scene, Sam was inspired by what great piece of literary work?
I have no idea.
This came from Macbeth.
A Hulk comic book? Oh.
It was Dunkirk Woods coming to life.
That's right. That's what we did with our education. I remember Dart cut down a lot of these... only used dead trees, I think. He was very particular about that, but only laid dead trees up for us that we could then pull over with ropes. I remember Donnie Campbell, pull! When the camera would get close.
And this was a scene that was shot in so many little pieces over so many months. So between here, the original shoot, and then a couple of different pickups, it never seemed like that horrific of a sequence. And large portions were filmed in reverse, so we never really, I think, realized the full impact it was going to have on people.
I can see the pre-tear on that back robe ripping, the back of a robe below the vine. It always bugged me. Gaffer's tape in that shot. That was good. The vines wrapping around her legs seemed to work well. It was shot both in Marshall, Michigan and...
Gladwin, Michigan.
Oh, sorry, Gladwin. At Bruce's dad's cabin?
Mm-hmm.
You guys all had cabins. Ellen was a real sport to endure this. I mean, it was cold and it was... those vines were scratching her and it was very difficult. Very difficult shoot for her. It's not a great wardrobe we gave her, that...
No. The entire wardrobe budget was $200, but...
Yeah. What was on your mind, Rob, when you came up with that idea?
Sam, you know, I was thinking, could we hurt the audience? And the entire audience jumps at that moment. This is when we had idea of what we
jump up out of their theater and leave is where they jump to.
In fact, my wife saw this movie 14 years ago, and thought that whoever made it were the sickest people alive. And little did she know she would end up married to one of them. So,
Oh, she saw it at that time?
Mm-hmm.
Did she know that was your idea to take the vine scene that far?
Oh, absolutely.
I think what happened was we got the dailies back. They had just attacked her, and then you said we need to go farther. Am I wrong about that?
It may have been something like that. The scene worked...
That's what it was, and you wanted more. Joel LaDuca's music was great here. That talking drum he's using. I saw this movie without Joe's music, and it was not working at all. I don't know if you had the same feeling. Remember that woman came out of it and said, well, it's all right. That one woman, the friend of Ruth Paul's. Then Joe's music got on it, and I really came together for me. You know, it was scary when it was supposed to be, at least for the audiences back in 1982.
Bruce may have some horrible story to tell. I know that in Josh's journal, he tells a little story about when we were shooting this, Ellen stepped on something and left this blood print on the little dolly boards we had.
Oh, really?
Mm. And I made some crass comment about suffering for art, which they've never forgiven me for, so...
Remember that happened by accident, that the key was stuck up there once, and we said, oh, let's incorporate that. That's good. That'll just be another moment. That's cool how Joe's music kind of waits till that point to kick in.
Mm-hmm.
It's bold of him. Scare chords. I think that scare worked better in the earlier version of this movie, Within the Woods.
What happened to you? Cheryl, what's the matter with you? Did something in the woods do this to you?
No, it was the woods themselves. They're alive.
Tim Fala was our cameraman and our director of photography.
Mm-hmm.
But only really for the first half of the movie, because then he...
Left at Christmas.
He left at Christmas.
And we shot for 6 more weeks.
But he did do a good job when we were there, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when he left, and maybe this is in Josh's journal, I don't know. He said, okay, guys, I'm going back to Detroit. Now, here's the RES. But do not touch the ARIE-BL, that sound sync camera. That is, I'm just going to leave it here. Be in my bedroom. Here's the lenses for it and the mounts. But really, don't touch that. Just the ARIE-S. I don't trust you with it. It's from the school. Oh, okay, Tim. We're just going to make a feature with the ARIE-S. Good luck, guys. Yeah, you can trust us. The moment.
Is he out of sight yet? He's gone. Okay, get that BL out.
God, we were so irresponsible.
In fact, we were very fortunate. Wayne State University up in Detroit had just closed their film department, and so we were able to rent an ARIE-BL and an ARIE-S for like $500 for 3 months.
But I thought we used the one that he had gotten for us.
He got it from Wayne State through his connections.
Oh, we were renting it at a cheap rate. Is that
yeah, and they only had entrusted it to him or something
I'm
like
sure,
that.
I'm sure, I'm sure. I begged you not to pull the camera out of that room, but you wouldn't listen to me.
That's right. In fact, the ARIE-S we rented from Victor Duncan, as I recall.
I remember, because when we brought it back there,
it wouldn't go back together.
The technician said when he opened up the back plate, it exploded on him.
I know.
He said, somebody on your crew has twisted this camera, the metal on it. I don't know how they did it. I could think of like 16 shots where that may have happened. We twisted the structure of the camera itself. Plate would never go back on.
We're coming up on the nighttime bridge sequence, but Tom Sullivan, the makeup artist and production designer, was handed the worst job in the world. We had tow trucks come and tear up an old bridge and then said, Tom, here, go in and dress it. So he was stuck climbing all over these giant girders and hanging stuff on them, and there's a famous photo of him giving everybody the finger with this bridge in the background, a self-portrait of just a very angry guy who's been put in a very compromising, difficult position of having to dress something that was very dangerous without proper safety harnesses. And he considered himself a makeup artist, not a set dresser. But low budget knows no bounds in titles or categories.
That car looks unrusted and clean.
You see something?
This was a cool idea, Sam, because we shot this in front of the house that we were living in that eventually became a horror house. We were kicked out. But it was parked on an angle. We parked up on the bank, so the lights are actually straight towards you, but the whole scene's on a tilt. The ground's all very tilted relative to the car and the lights.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of a...
That says two movie lights there. That time. Not really the headlights.
Sam, does it seem tame through right now by today's standards?
Tame?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't believe that this is an X-rated movie.
No.
In fact, I think you kids should probably not be watching this unless it was purchased by your parent for you, and I doubt that's happened. Right, Robbie?
I think they should...
Well, you know, I see the video cover there. Does that say R-rated on it? Or does it say unrated? The truth is, it doesn't have a rating.
Right, it never got rated, so...
Don't help Vinny out at Elite Entertainment. We didn't have a crane. I think we had a bucket, a construction bucket.
Like a scissors lift. And there's a classic story. We got the dailies on this. And the camera just continued to run after that for like 10 minutes. The entire load just ran out. Well, Sam was shooting it, and he had fallen asleep up in the bucket. We had been like, been up for 48 hours, and Sam fell asleep with the camera running up in the crane. So it just rolled on and on and on.
I did. I fell asleep a number of times up there. I didn't think anyone knew. So I kept quiet about it until the dailies came back. I know I was shooting a take one time.
Oh my
I remember the shoot got really grueling after a time.
Yeah.
Really hard, mostly on the girls with their makeup, and their, in fact, they were freezing cold and pouring this sticky Kiro syrup down their backs and on their fronts. They'd be sticking to things, and they'd be freezing, and we didn't have any heat in the place,
right,
or running water. So they were just miserable. Good makeup, Tom Sullivan.
This is the old magician's trick on the elevator.
One by one we will take you. Did you remember that this was the first scene we saw cut back in Detroit in 1980 probably?
Right.
From Edna Ruth Paul, she sent it back to us. It was really long at the time.
Yeah.
We saw it over at that sinking, a film sinking place where they
Bill Russ
commercials.
Bill Russ, I forget what it was called, Image or
Image Express. Because this movie was shot in Morristown, Tennessee, but also in Detroit, and some of the post was done in Detroit. A little bit of it. The sinking of the dailies, at least. Rob suggested we stick her not in the foot, but in the Achilles tendon. He believed that based on the myth, it would punish the audience a little bit more. I think that's where that came from. Remember, Riley?
That's right.
I think I just said foot in the script, and you made me make it the Achilles tendon. Is that the proper way to say
mm-hmm.
it? Tendon. Yeah. I like the idea of a bandaged monster. Now, Bruce can obviously get out from under that thing by now. He's really having to milk this. I'm still stuck. So help me, folks. I can't figure out getting my arm out from under that thing.
And the shot over behind the pencil there, that was one of the great things about 16, that you just, it doesn't work with 35. You don't have that nice depth of field to... Ah, the old rubber hand trick.
I like this scene. This is kind of fun and exciting. I like the use of the handheld camera here.
After this, the audience realized
Bruce is worthless, and this is the guy you want to be identifying with. Remember, Bruce was whining he doesn't want to fight the monsters. He was crying. I found him crying in the back room one day. He just wants to play scenes like this where he can kiss the girl and look lovingly at the girls and do sweeter stuff. He thought that's what the movie should have been. A series of these scenes stretched over 2 hours. I finally sat down and said, Bruce, we're making a horror picture here. You're going to have to shape up. Remember that, Robbie?
Mm-hmm. He really got lightweight.
Yeah. And Dart and Don Campbell like built that fireplace even, didn't they?
Yep. I mean,
there were no rocks there, right?
No. We used to throw moonshine. We got moonshine down and used it to keep that fire going.
Really?
Yeah. Gary Holt got us moonshine, and that's how we'd keep that thing stoked up. We had it in a styrofoam cup, often is seen in sitting in the scene, and it would beat up perspiration on the outside of it.
God, it was cold in that cellar too. I remember that cold draft. I can still feel it cutting right through me when we were down there. Under the house, it was just freezing down there. Is that Ellen?
I don't even know anymore. we're starting to come up on the scenes with more doubles and what we call fake shimps than real actors from this point out, all the monsters and all the people.
Right. I think that's your mom's sewing machine, Rob.
It was my mom's sewing machine.
Or Dodo's, maybe.
That was my mom's, and we took it down. Eventually, it became an heirloom.
Eventually, it became an heirloom? What do you mean?
And now it's a...
It's a big antique. It was on the borderline back then, I think. You mean now it'd be worth something, huh?
Yeah, it'd be worth...
Dart built that bench, too. First version of the Ramo cam here. 2x4. Two guys on either side.
You can see that real glass flying at the actress.
Yeah.
Nowadays, safety officers wouldn't let you do that.
Look like Howard Bruce is in that scene. Makes me laugh. He's just sitting there. That is what he's like in real life a little bit more. And the only reason I say that is because I think these kids...
They deserve to know.
They need to know.
They need to know.
Who their heroes are. What they're made of.
Originally, when we tried to get financing for this movie, we came to New York on our first big trip. It was, in fact, the weekend that the U.S. Air Force crashed going into Iran to rescue the hostages. And we met with a couple of distributors out in New York who told us that you can't make a movie that's 20 minutes of setup and the rest of it is just killing people. And they were very upset that... that we were going to proceed with this script at that time, because it was only like a 50-page script and it was 12 pages of setup and then the horror kicked in. And I bet they're sorry they didn't handle it ultimately. But.
It's funny how we couldn't find a distributor. Seems like a straight enough ahead horror picture.
Yeah.
In the closet there was that Tamaqua shirt. That's my old summer camp. Great place for kids. Up in Algonquin Park. The she-bitch. Little flare on the camera there.
Yeah.
I think it's a light leak. I think it's a light leak when we open the camera at some point. Maybe somehow that daylight spool got exposed or side of the film got exposed. Your sister doubles for Teresa Tilly here.
Yes, my sister was drafted once we...
Two cabinets down. It gets safer and safer for Bruce in that cabinet. In that cabin with the elimination of every cabinet.
Less things for him to cower under.
Yeah. That's the last... How can that board completely trap him? That is the most absurd image I've ever seen. That's your sister's hand, and
I actually think
This is Teresa, right?
Yes, it is. But Sam, I forget. Was it originally that she was to bite it off?
It was supposed to be that he cut through her hand. Here's what it was. Within the woods, Bruce's hand was supposed to be lopped off, and he played the monster at the time. But because we couldn't cut it all the way through, Bruce, in an ad lib, brought that hand to his mouth and bit the useless hanging article off. So we thought it was so great, we put it in this.
That's right. Sam, I think this is still unrated material.
Yeah. If we had more money, we would have showed that knife coming up through her slowly, because she's supposed to be being slowly impaled upon it deeper and deeper as she falls back.
This is All My Sister as a double, shot in Detroit at a later date.
Got milk?
Yep. Now a housewife in Downers Grove outside Chicago, so...
Bad wig, is it? Now she's got black hair all of a sudden. Well, we've got a wig that'll match. I mean, it'll match the length, not the color. We'll take it. Oh, okay. Is that your sister's hair, or is that a wig?
A wig.
Yeah.
This is Ted Raimi in the boots walking by somebody doubling.
In 1980.
Right.
And he's about 31 now, and it's... 1998, so how old does that make him?
Young. 15?
Bruce, again, the coward. He's not acting.
Coming up here was one of the most difficult things on the shoot for me.
Ooh.
I was one of the body parts under the floorboard, myself and another person. So we were, in this shot coming up, the body parts sticking out from under the floorboards. And I remember just getting horribly claustrophobic under there. And
with an axe slicing above
you. Yeah, with an axe coming through the floor. Mm.
That shot where the screen went red, we got that idea from Mr. Granger, the great theater owner in Detroit. What's his first name, Rob?
Andy Granger. He's now dead, but he ran Butterfield Theaters.
And he said, boys, my advice to you if you're making a horror picture is to have the blood literally running down the screen. So that's what we did. We said, that's a great shot. Okay. He didn't take our picture, but he gave us a good idea for a shot.
Yes, you go to a cabin in the woods for a weekend. You chop up your friend. Of course you'd bury him before you call the police.
Yeah, why do they have to bury him now, exactly?
Good dramatic moment?
Yeah. Is this shot in Marshall, too?
Mm-hmm. 6 or 7 months later. You listen. Bruce has a really bad cold.
She can't even stand up.
Linda cannot walk with a leg like that. She can't even stand up.
Bruce hasn't in 20 years lived down that reading.
I only mention it to share the pain Bruce feels. Thank the lightning of the load in some small way.
As a true friend would. I always kind of like that scene because I understand where that guy was coming from. He really didn't feel any moral responsibility. He had killed his girlfriend, and now the guy was on his own. Sam, is that your voice?
No, that's Ellen. That's Ellen Sandweiss.
This scene coming up. So we filmed the main piece, and then we had to do the animation that's coming up here shortly. Back in Detroit, many months later. And we got a woman who we had worked with in a bunch of Super 8 movies named Cheryl Guttridge, who is now actually an author named Margaret Allison. And this took about an hour and a half to do, and she couldn't move. And at the end of, once we got it, the very last thing done on her leg, she just rolled over and vomited for about 5 minutes. And I felt sorry for the poor girl.
Thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah, I thought. To humble everybody.
She was a trooper, Cheryl. It was done by Tom Sullivan again, the drawing
on the ankle.
And it was probably Bart Pierce on the single frame animation.
Although it's really hard to see in this. The guy's got a stick sticking out of him here. And at the time, the censor board was just outraged that we would keep this. It was one of the many reasons that they had a problem with it. And the same with his broken wrist.
Bring him around, that's right. This is that concept.
Those scleral contacts that the monster wore, you could only wear at that time for about 15 minutes at a shot, five times a day. And we had no running water in the cabin, and Bruce kind of became the eye doctor. He put him in and out of people, and once we got him in, we had to roll as much as we could in 15 minutes with those monster eyes. But
very painful, I think, to put them in.
Yeah,
poor girls really put up with a lot. Joe's music is great there.
Sam, what do you have to say about this scene?
I always had a question about the cutting of that second close-up of her. Somehow it goes on a beat too long before the transition.
He had just pulled her head out of a bowl of onions in order to get tears in her eyes. He had chopped up all these onions right there. It was cheaper to buy onions than it was to get Visine. sure Bruce had a story coming up here about the sequence, but
why do you think they put him on his own track?
So he could complain about how he got torn up and his face got damaged by little Ted Raimi. Those were Ted Raimi's arms coming through there, and Ted tore a big piece of flesh off of Bruce's face that the rest of the shoot we kind of had to mask over. And in fact, you can see the blood running down his face in that one shot where he got cut right as he's pulling away. This is when Tom was starting to lose his mind. Tom Sullivan, the makeup man.
What happened?
And the hours were just starting to kill him, but, you know, we had like 2 minutes to turn around makeup on two different actresses twice in a night or something because of how we shot things so ridiculously. But
love Joe's music here. Betsy's really great in that scene.
She is really great.
Cut loose.
In fact, it was a different makeup. She was Snake Woman there, and we changed it to a doll face, and we shot that before we shot the interior scene. If you really look carefully, she's got a different makeup on than you drag her out in. It's more snaky. There you can see that stick sticking out of him finally. Just remember this sequence being in theaters and the people just thinking he's the ultimate idiot, and because it was a video hit, really, I don't know if people ever got the true feeling of being in that hockey game like experience in the theater with this movie where people were chanting to cut him up, and but they really howled at him dumping water down a dead man's throat.
One of my funny favorite shots coming up here. Yow! She comes after him. She's really furious. Flying Angel! Change the grip for continuity. Hi-ya! This is really the monster attack scene. That's kind of my favorite kind of thing. And they cut loose.
I like the hand that's going onto Bruce's face in a second. The original face hugger.
Yeah, it's kind of a William Shatner tribute, this shot. The hand coming on and coming off. It's accidentally off there. We actually pulled it off in this shot, but for some reason it never survived.
He thought by having him spew different colored liquids rather than just blood, we wouldn't have as much censorship trouble.
That was a good death noise. Yeah, but the censors didn't care that it was black, white, anything. There'll be no bodily fluids emitting from orifices.
That's right.
Period. Bruce gets a little more serious, I think. That's my Shakespeare book from the Complete Works, remember?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what that book was.
It was.
Old Stroh's can. Can they don't have anymore, is that
right?
Nice? Remember, when was that color?
Yeah, the white and gold.
Not that you were ever a drinker.
No. this sequence, Sam and I drove down together to Tennessee from Detroit together, and on the way down, he explained to me in the car how he was going to shoot the sequence of chopping her up. There's a whole bunch of little cuts leading up to it. I had no idea what he was talking about.
Sure. Joel cut this scene too. He did a good job. Joel Cohn. To some of that old imagery we see in those old Hammer horror pictures.
That's right.
We felt we had to have him carrying the girl.
I think in this scene there's four or five different women who play this part through the whole course of the sequence. These nights out here, although it doesn't look like it, it was about 10 degrees. And it was just freezing.
I always felt the digging effect, sound effect, is light. It never had to bite into the earth to merit the hole that we see later dug.
And women don't generally let you shoot that shot right up their nose like that. They see it once, and that's the last time they'll let you ever do that.
Uh-huh.
This is a whole nother girl playing the part in a bad curly wig.
A Morristown woman? A
Morristown girl.
A local woman who you hired as a stand-in? Is that
mm-hmm.
what you did? Oh, once Betsy had left.
Once Betsy had left.
I see.
Everybody left at Christmas after 6 weeks or 7 weeks of shooting. And we still had another 5 or 6 weeks to go. So that was a double that we shot sometime between Christmas and New Year's.
I think the reason we took so much time with this was because I love the look of that landscape. It looks like the surface of the moon to me. So we let Bruce milk his resting and his baloney and his breathing, the stuff he loves to do.
That's luck.
It really was lucky that we could just barely see his face. Unless Bruce was smart enough to make sure he could... I don't know. No, probably not. It was like... couldn't have been that.
And Bruce probably, in his voice track, talked about what's coming.
Cheryl Guthridge is actually the girl coming up there.
Out of dry manure, which is basically horse manure that we covered her in a garage.
At least it was dry. Grabbing its murder beam. They worked on the bridge. So same beams. We only have like two effects in our brain, and this is one of them. The fake beams that look like wood. We can use them on the bridge, and we can beat the brains out of the monsters with them. That's how our thinking process went.
There was a big thing when she spits on the lens like that. The cameraman went crazy. He said, I should have known she was going to spit towards us. Why didn't anybody tell me? And he was just outraged that he hadn't had proper protection on the camera for that moment.
He was tired of people, the monster, spitting stuff at him.
But Bruce did that about 16 times.
I like how game the monsters are in this picture. To wrestle and more bile spewing.
As we were in editing, Sam turned to me and he said, "I have one regret. I wish we had beaten her naked." And
I never said that. I never said that. How dare you?
Watch Bruce. He's horribly limping as he comes into this next shot right here. Anyways, that night Bruce sprained his ankle terribly, and Sam and I helped him along the way by poking it.
I think Bruce bought that gun at Kmart for us. Or he had Don do it, I'm not sure.
He did. And when this shoot was, when we were over, Bruce and I, Sam was, I don't know where he was, but when it was all over and we were just packing up, we took every prop from the house, Bruce and I, and about 100 shotgun shells, and just shot everything up. And then Sam came back and we dragged everything out into a giant bonfire that got out of control.
Well, it's time to leave the place, I think, and we had to get rid of that garbage. Oh, boy, good shot. To this day, though, there is a time capsule that we left at that cabin. To be open, I think, 20 years from the day of its burial. It was in a glass container, sealed shut, buried about 6 feet down with a trap door set.
That was me. It was over my shoulder.
Bruce, look out for that little thingamabobby there, buddy. Just on that step, you may want to watch. It was tough for Bruce because he really had to do his own makeup and keep track of it. This thing was shot, a lot of it was out of order.
Hugely out of order, yeah.
He was covered by so many different colors of bile, based on who he was slaughtering at what time. Just have to know how he would be covered in it and what makeup to try and attain.
That's right, we had no makeup people, no wardrobe people, no continuity people.
I think that stuff was shot in my garage for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Was a continuity wipe because he had no idea what he was supposed to look like in the upcoming scene, so he had to wipe off his face again, get back to a new state. outdated box of Band-Aids now.
I just thought it was a funny joke.
Yeah. Sound effect, I think, is from the Time Machine. This is after the entire crew had gone. We shot this sequence. I think we were losing our minds too. So cold, and we never stopped working. Working these, I guess it was just 16-hour days, but the cold made it seem like
endless,
longer.
And like that little shot was 3 or 4 hours, you know, to you hanging upside down in rafters and.
That's right. I had to pull my body up above his, back down again. Josh was our cinematographer now, Josh Becker. And it looks pretty good. It's all the lighting.
The ultimate vessel glide. Very messy situation. Where you built the thing that fit over a 2x4 and we put gaffer's tape on it and covered it with Vaseline and slide it along there.
But when it got that cold, the Vaseline didn't work that
right.
Well. It didn't have the lubricating qualities it's supposed to. I think you were the shadow for me then. That's a real gunshot. We'd really be shooting that gun toward the camera. It was insane. You know what I'm talking about? Well, yeah. Bruce, better angle it up. We're out here. Yeah. Okay. You know, that way responsible. I think you're in this upcoming scene also, playing the monster, right?
Mm-hmm. I am the monster.
I remember when I was filming, after Tim had left, my hands would get covered in Karo too. Karo syrup, just because everything in the cabin was covered in it. And there was no running water, but there was electricity and there was a coffee maker. So everybody had to wash my hands in the hot coffee before every take. Torture, burning my hands so I get that sticky stuff off so I could load the film in the camera. Those are your arms, right?
Mm-hmm. My fingers sticking through the rubber gloves.
Boy, you're talking about seeing that tube.
Yeah. A little digital cleanup. Jump cut.
Torture jump cut, yeah.
Yeah.
These things can all be seen now. This is before video existed that we made this picture. We just thought the audience would see it once on the big screen and be around for study.
When we made this movie, 25% of the U.S. box office came from drive-ins. So we were making what we thought was the quintessential drive-in movie.
I think we just thought we were making one that we would try and get sold to
right.
be able to be shown in the drive-ins. But yeah, we tried to make it work for the drive-ins, exactly.
Now this, no one ever saw the stick, so people assumed that they were pulling off a piece of his male anatomy right here. And I always couldn't understand what they were thinking, but that many comments came about that.
Good fall, Bruce.
Right. There wasn't a single stunt double in this.
Also, the guy's got no padding whatsoever. He's
no.
taking the beating.
Pools of Karo syrup. Little skull face.
I think you came up with that. I'm not sure. But somebody, not me. Who knows what diseases he's contracting from that thing? Oh. It's my favorite sound, Bruce. Great.
Now comes the hard part for the Bart Pierce and Tom Sullivan, the little sequence that took them like 3 months in a basement.
They did a great job, those two.
I always liked that aqua color blue, whatever that was.
It's a great combination of mats that the boys did, Tom and Bart. Combining stop motion animation and live action liquid in different parts of the frame. Tom was really into that, like the bubbles coming out of this guy's head, although you can see the mat shifting. It was all done in camera. They did a good job with it too. Same with combining the fire with that animation. Obviously they can't exist together. Multiple passes.
Not hard nowadays, but once upon a time it was all difficult.
They won't even try and do it like that anymore.
No. When you go to Bart's house, the place would just reek from all the stuff that was down there, especially the upcoming cockroaches, which are the smelliest creatures on earth.
Bruce is really great in this. Knows there's more abuse coming his way.
Snake, you can't even see it there.
I I always like the painting of blood on his face for that last shot there. That was our pre-attempt at visualizing what the meltdown would look like after it was over.
Bruce not wanting to put any more Carol around his eyes because it was so driving him crazy that each time he blinked it was sticking.
Is that what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Right, that must have been harsh.
Yeah.
Did we have a different ending in mind originally? Or it was written different? Did we get the idea there? I can't remember.
Yes, we did get the idea there, and I don't remember what the end was, and it maybe never had one, and we were always looking for it.
Rob, what door were you on for this?
I was on the front door.
The very front door?
Uh-huh.
We had everyone working.
Yeah.
Somebody pulled that door. Maybe Dart pulled that. You pulled that. Well, thanks for joining us for our screening of The Evil Dead. Hope you enjoyed it.
Sam, any last words you want to tell people who've watched all the way to this point in time?
Gee, I thought I just wrapped it up with that.
You
that
did. It was a beautiful
last
wrap
word
up.
Thing I did.
Yeah. Thanks for watching.
Yeah. Well, I would like to wrap up by saying thank you to all our Detroit investors. When three scrawny-looking kids came into their homes with a Super 8 projector, they easily could have shoved us out, but they dared believe in our dream, and it made our life of filmmaking possible, and to us it meant a great deal, and we hope we tried to return the favor by providing a lot of entertainment in our pictures. We've always tried to make pictures that were entertaining for the audience, and we hope that we've returned their belief in us through that attempt of providing entertainment. And thanks for all the hardworking people who worked on this show for a nickel, all the actors and everybody just made this picture to try and scare the audience, you know, make a horror picture. No one was really paid anything. So my thanks to everybody who worked so hard on the film.